Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of weird. It's alchemy. It's making money from nothing. When you look at what all of us do in this digital space, we don't really have real connections, and we build this relationship with people, and then we offer them or generate products, or we find a need that they have, and then we create a product to serve it, and we charge them money for that. And that's just making us alchemy. You know?
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion and purpose. My guest on the show today is the dark horse of the digital world. Jason Hewlett has been making money with computers since the last century. He was in the digital world before there even was one. Before I get on to Jason, just a heads up. I've released another of the podcast shorts this week, and it was called The Wellness Spiral. It's all about maintaining a strong mindset, and it's my process that I use to keep me balanced throughout the day. So I'm going to be making a few more of these shorts, and they will be available under the free stuff tab at the lifepassionandbusiness.com website. So have a look there and see if there's something of use for you. So now let's get back to Jason. Jason is a wizard with the digital stuff, but there's more to this man. He's a medieval swordsman, martial arts man, and I only discovered after we finished recording that he's a huge Star Trek fan. You know, I quote, "I ran one of the largest Star Trek fan clubs in Europe all by post. Who knew?" And I was very disappointed we did not get to chat about it on the program, but possibly a good thing, or I may have gone full on sci-fi geek, so you probably were reprieved of that situation. Jason has been in the digital industry since 1996, and that's before Google, before Facebook, in fact, before everything that we've come to take for granted. He and his wife run a successful digital agency called Speedy Consultants. They're involved in client affiliate programs and digital marketing campaigns. The current business focus is an affiliate consulting business called Affiliate Dojo. A touch of the martial arts here and here too. He aims to help businesses maximize affiliate programs and develop systems to promote other people's products. It's all about helping them create the process and earn commissions and maximize revenues. Of course, outside of the business, Jason likes to teach people to hit each other historically accurately as he teaches medieval sword fighting. So I hope you enjoy the conversation with Jason Hewlett. Welcome to Life, Passion and Business. And this is the first show of 2019. And I've just taken a few days out there to say this year. I am delighted today to have on the line with me Jason Hewlett. And Jason is very similar to myself. He's in the digital marketing world, but he's also a swordsman. So that's going to be an interesting set of conversations and questions we're going to ask Jason today. So welcome to the program, Jason.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Paul. Appreciate it.
It's great to have you here. And I understand from our brief conversation that you hardly stopped for the new year. So you're obviously a very busy man and very successful at what you do. So tell me, Jason, how did it happen for you? What's the story behind your life at this point?
Yeah, so where we are now, the digital agency I run, Speedy Consultants, has been running since 2003. My digital life started back in 1996. So for some of your listeners, it was before they were born. And in fact, it was a whole other century. You know, so last century, it's not funny.
That was the time of dial-up. That was when dial-up was normal.
Yeah, and Facebook didn't exist. I don't even think Mark Zuckerberg was born at that point. No Google. The biggest search engine I remember was Alta Vista.
Yes, I remember Alta Vista.
We had Lycos, Excite, remember those guys? Mm-hmm. And basically in those days, my sort of first introduction to the internet was when I was working for the Woolwich. And I was a business analyst for the Woolwich and was asked to look at this thing called the internet. to see what we could do with it.
You might want to say what the woolage is, actually, because I don't think anyone will know.
Sorry, it probably doesn't exist anymore, does it? So the woolage used to be a building society, which for any American listeners is like a mutual bank. And basically, I was asked by them to look at what we could do with this thing called the internet. We used this thing called Netscape Navigator to communicate around the web.
All this newfangled thing. It's probably a flash in the pan, but give it a go.
It's not going to last. It really wasn't. Who's going to do it? You know, it's not going to work. So I looked at that. I got sent on a course to build HTML pages. And that's how it all started. It literally was from there. I left the Woolwich in 90, this all gets hazy back in the day, so yeah. Around 1998-99, and joined the first personal finance aggregator. So these guys were the first kind of people to do what we see now as Money Supermarket, compare the market, Confused. We were the first people to do it, and that really showed me the power of the internet, because there was four guys sat in a room with three computers, so you do the math. You know, what two of us were sharing, and basically we built this business that was valued in the millions. And when you looked at what it was, there was no product, it was information. And wow. It was just basically having eyeballs and an audience. So it sort of started from there, really. That's sort of my love of the internet really sort of came from that.
Those were the Wild West days, weren't they? I mean, you could do anything in those. I mean, all right, you were limited by bandwidth and stuff, but you could do anything and make money in those days.
Yeah, pretty much. You'd be an idiot if you could, if I'm honest, in those days. You know, you get to sort of 2001, 2002. It was money hand over fist, because you still had quite a dominance over even existing businesses or big businesses, because they weren't looking at the web at all. So you could go in as a consultant into any big FTSE 100 company and just blow their minds and just start talking to them about pay-per-click, buying traffic, having people, you know, inquire on the internet. What, 24/7? Doesn't the internet shut down when I shut my office? No. You know, and it was all that kind of stuff. So we did some consulting with some big clients as well. But yeah, it sort of now, for us, we've sort of gone almost full circle back to sort of the small mid-sized business, and some of the stuff we're helping those guys with is just business changing. And that's what we like. You know, you can give the stuff to the big guys, but it doesn't make an impact in the same way. You know, you can increase somebody's ROI by 100% in a bank. Yeah, whoop-de-doo. But you do that for a small business, and you know it's life changing. So it's kind of I suppose it's altruistic about it. I actually enjoy that more now than just saying, oh look, we've just signed this multi-million paying client. So that's why we sort of keep doing what we keep doing, really. And we're sort of going back towards the more sort of consulting part of stuff and helping business owners actually see what they've got and trying to monetize it, because everyone's always looking for the next big thing. And you actually say to them, actually, why don't you just look at the thing you've got and see what you can do with it? You know, and sometimes that can be a great help. And I think the internet's now gone full circle in certain things, especially things like affiliate marketing and performance based marketing, which we were doing at Google, you know, people like Amazon were doing back in 1996, 1997. And that's now coming back to the fore. So we're, you know, it's very cyclical.
Affiliate stuff's coming back, is it? I thought affiliate died pretty much.
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Yeah, Neil Patel will tell you affiliate marketing's dead, because he stood on stage at Affiliate Summit last week and said it was dead. And it's never going away. No. Affiliate marketing will never ever go away, because if you think about what an affiliate marketer is at its core, it's basically somebody referring someone to another product and earning a commission. Yeah. So that's never going away. We've had that since the Romans. Yeah. You know, people have paid people for introductions. It's never going to go away. No. They may change the name of it, they may change what it's called.
Yeah.
But the underlying structure will always stay the same.
I'm going to have to be very careful in this conversation not to get too geeky with you, because I could but for my listeners' sake, I need to be really careful I don't get really geeky, because I get quite inspired by this sort of stuff, and it's like it touches something in me. I go, tell me more. So I need to kind of go, okay. I mean, I'm fascinated by it, you know, and obviously I'm a digital marketer, you know, from the same thing, not in your league with your kind of clients. I work with smaller clients and more on a one-to-one basis. So what is it that drives you into this? Where is your passion in all of this? I mean, you've touched on it a bit, but what is it? What makes you passionate about it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's kind of weird. It's alchemy. It's making money from nothing. When you look at what all of us do in this digital space, we don't really have real connections with people. We connect on Facebook, we connect on LinkedIn, we connect on Twitter, and we build this relationship with people, and then we offer them or generate products, or we find a need that they have, and then we create a product to serve it, and we charge them money for that. And that's just making, that's alchemy. You know, that's turning lead into gold.
I suppose I'd never given it that thought, but I guess there is that, and this is all right. This has to be coming from your interest in swords, the idea of alchemy.
Some of it. I mean, interesting. I mean, yeah, talk about not getting too geeky, but what I like about the sword thing is swordsmanship's kind of the same as digital marketing. That's kind of the weird thing to say, but it's good because when you give somebody a sword. Because I teach, just so the listeners know, I teach medieval and Japanese swordsmanship.
I need to know how you got into that. So I'll park that bit and come. So yeah, go and tell me. You teach this process, yeah.
So I teach these martial arts, and one of the things that you do is you give somebody a sword for the first time, and they're going to do one or two things. They're going to start swinging it around their head like they're some mad banshee, or they're going to start going. something from Star Wars, and it's kind of interesting. Everybody does it, men, women, boys, girls, they all do the same thing. And then what you do is you then teach them these techniques. But what tends to happen with the Western brain especially is we can't believe something is as simple as it is, so we elaborate, we overcomplicate things. So all of a sudden you get people taking extra steps, extra swings, they move their shoulders, they do this, and you have to spend a lot of time breaking that back down and saying, no, you don't need to do that. That's wasted effort. And then when you compare that to marketing, it's the same thing. If you said to me, right, build a Facebook group, I'd go off and I'd find 100 different ways of building a Facebook group. Where actually the first thing to do is actually go onto Facebook, go to create group, name it, stick a logo on it, and job done. That's the process. But we tend to overcomplicate things, so
But that's the group, and that's not actually got anyone in the group, is it? So
no, exactly. So, but then even then, when you say right now start marketing to the group, you then start thinking about how you can do campaigns. You think about pay-per-click. You think, I've got an email list. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. So before you know it, you've created this massive complex system in your head that says, right, I've got to do all this stuff, because it can't be as easy as just actually doing some Facebook ads.
It's funny. You seem to just read a page out of my diary, because I seem to do that quite a lot.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's kind of interesting because it's actually... as much as I love swordsmanship, the bit that I hate is actually telling people not to do stuff. It's like, you don't do it. You don't do it like that. You don't do it like that. It wouldn't work like that. And it's really just to simplify systems and people. So I take a lot more out of sword in these last sort of 3 or 4 years where I've been actually running classes and running schools. You can actually start to see, you know, comparisons everywhere.
So this thing about, is this the passion for you? Is this about this simplicity, bringing simplicity into action?
Pretty much. It because people get lost and overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So they overcome, they get in their own way. Yeah. And I'm running something next week. We're running a challenge next week to help people generate their first affiliate sale.
Right.
And we've already got a couple of guys on there that are saying, oh, I want to go now. So we say, okay, we'll start you a little bit early. It'd be a good case study in this. So I say to them, right, okay, buy a product, review that product on YouTube, put the video live, and then at least you've done step one. So then I get emails back saying, do I need to connect my YouTube account to Instagram? Do I need to create 60-second videos out of this YouTube video and create to Instagram? Do I need to do this? Whoa. Have you made the video? No. Have you bought the product? No. Right. So why the goddamn hell are you talking about this stuff? And it's just stuff like that. And that's the problem for people. I think a lot of problem for people is they just get lost in it. they get too wrapped up. We see it all the time. You know, my Facebook feed as a marketer is the same as yours. It's just bombarded with search engine watch, search engine land, Facebook ad news. There's just so much.
It's the noise. I talk about this all the time, listener. There is so much noise that, and the noise just gets louder and louder and louder, and everyone trying to get attention. Yeah. And I think that is the thing, isn't it, now? It's this thing about we're not short of information anymore. We're just short of attention.
Yeah. And sometimes I don't even think it's that. I think it's actually it's a lack of focus.
Yeah, maybe it is.
For the individual, because if you've got that focus, everything else will you will self-filter.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. You know, you and again, we come back to the sourcemanship. If you have multiple targets, you're not going to try and kill all of them all in one go. You're going to pick one.
Yeah.
And you're going to pick the one that's either closest to you or puts you in a position that protects you from most of the others. So it's kind of interesting how you can look at things, and actually if your life's on the line, suddenly you'll find focus.
So tell me, so the swordsmanship thing, that is quite fascinating. And you are the first swordsman I've had on this show. So let's...
maybe the last, you never know.
So how did you get into swordsmanship?
Yeah, so I've, as a kid, I've always been into swords and knights and armor and all that kind of stuff. So it was something that I've been passionate about for a long time. I did a lot of martial arts in my younger days.
Yeah.
And then tended to drift away from that as I got bigger, injured. Body doesn't do what it used to do. But you still want to keep that kind of, if you like, that do something that has that martial what's the word I'm trying to think? It's that martial feeling, that sort of Budo kind of thing. You go and you train, and that's what you do, and you've got a collective group of people. So I couldn't do karate anymore, so I'm just too knackered, to be honest. The body doesn't do what it used to do. So you tend to move into something that's not on the Japanese side, especially, it's non-combative. So we're not beating each other over the head with swords and things. On the medieval side, we do, but we wear a lot of protective gear before we do that.
Yeah.
And it's just something that I started with the Japanese stuff. We did the Japanese stuff for a long, long time. Most people, when they think of martial arts, think of Japan or China or the Far East, and they readily accept that these martial arts are historically based. There's books, there's, you know, teachers, there's all this stuff that's been handed down through generations. What a lot of people don't realise is the same thing happened in Europe. So we have martial art traditions going back to the 1200s in Germany, in Spain, in Italy. And these books were just been sat in libraries and in museums, and no one really knew what they were. And then about 25 years ago, somebody came across this manuscript and was looking at it, and actually then sort of started to translate some of the writings, and then discovered that we actually had our first self-defense manual. So this first self-defense manual was written in around 1300.
I did see a program about this some time ago, and it had an amazing picture, and it had some sort of picture of it been drawn at the time with drawings about how to fight with a sword, and they were using a tiny little like metal
shield. Yeah,
a tiny one. It's like, and it was like fascinating when the guy was showing it, and it was obvious. You just say the simplicity of the moves using that. It was so obvious.
Yeah, I mean it is, and it's interesting because when you read the manuscript, it's a case of saying if he does this, you do that, and then if he then does something else, then you're going to do this. So it's all formulaic.
Yeah,
and the sort of the mind blowing thing for me is sometimes when we have new guys turn up at classes on the medieval side, we'll come and we'll do some ring and some wrestling or some disarms or that kind of stuff, and they'll go, oh my god, we do that in jiu-jitsu. So they'll do exactly the same thing that they've learned from teachers in Japan. So you have these sort of parallel systems running that we know never touched. You know, the Japanese weren't
the body's the body. It's weight distribution's the same. You know, if you're going to tip someone over, there's only several ways of doing it.
So it's sort of two arms, two legs, one head. They're only going to do certain things. So
So what is it about this sword? I mean, obviously, you liked it as a child, but what brought you? What keeps you into it? I mean, where's the pattern? Is it this simplicity thing again?
Yeah, it's sort of that. I mean, I'm a bit of a history nerd. So it's sort of, I suppose for me, it's a bit of everything. So I get to keep that interest in history. We do a lot of studying on the manuscripts. We do a lot of reading, and spend a lot of time on forums talking to people about meanings of things and how things could work and application, that kind of stuff. So it's that that sort of feeds my geekiness. And then twice, three times a week, I get out to swing steam at people. So it's a good stress reliever. The Friday night stuff, so the stuff we do tonight, the Japanese stuff, is actually, we do call it moving Zen. It's very meditative.
Is that different to Kendo, whatever they call it?
Kendo is the sport version.
It's the stick version, yeah.
Is basically with the bamboo, and they wear the masks, and they tap each other on the head. So anything Japanese with a do in it, so judo, aikido, kendo, tends to be a, I'm going to get into trouble with some people, a watered down version.
Okay.
So it tends to be, they take all the lethal stuff out.
Yeah, of course.
To teach you stuff. But anything with a jutsu in it, so aikido, jujutsu, jujutsu, kenjutsu, aijutsu, tend to be more traditional based and tend to be older. So they tend to be before the 1830s, I think. We have a line that says anything after that tends to be sport. Anything before that tends to be really lethal, nasty stuff. So we teach the really lethal, nasty stuff, which unfortunately, it's good because it ties that connection back to history. But again, it has no practical application today because we don't walk around with swords.
No.
You know, until the zombies come.
Yeah.
Which is the thing we say to everybody, you know, you never know. But it's as a self-defense, it's great. It can be used. That you will learn universal principles for footwork training, body motion, balance, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, it's just cool. I love it.
Yeah. I can see there. It's one of the, I could see an interest in it, and I'm kind of myself, oh, I wonder if there's anywhere local that here that does that sort of thing. That might sound quite interesting.
Probably, and to be honest, I'd say stay away, because once you're in, that's it. It's not the mafia. Once you're in, you never give it. and as much as the wife hates it, it's not a cheap hobby either. It's not, you know, I could have picked a cheap hobby. You know, I don't know how I picked the most expensive hobby I've ever seen in my life. Really.
Why is it so expensive? Because of the swords?
Just the swords, armor, equipment. It's so special. It's still special. It's not.
It's all handmade, I guess. It's all handmade.
Everything's handmade. You know, making steel swords takes time. It's not cheap, but it's fun. I love it.
My connection with this, I have a tiny connection with this. I did quite a lot of stage fighting, like, I don't know, 30 years ago. No, not 30, right, okay. Maybe 25 years ago. I did quite a lot of performing, and I did quite a lot of stage fighting. So I did some stage sword fighting and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it wasn't contact. It wasn't designed to be contact. It was a dance sword, effectively. But I could understand, it was a lot of fun working it out and doing it. And, you know, from the audience perspective, it looked absolutely vicious.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. I mean, we struggle with that a little bit with because we have sort of reenactors and stage combat people, and it is very, very different.
Yeah,
because what you're trying to do is actually show something to the audience. What I'm actually trying to do is not show anybody anything. It's literally just do.
What we're trying to do is actually entertain people and make it interesting, and it was fun to do. So I can see the interest.
Yeah.
So tell me, in life for you, how do you measure success? What is your success model?
To be honest, we don't actually have one. I've looked at this before. We've looked at this sort of work-life balance, and we've looked at the things like I'm successful because I've got, you know, X number of, you know, I run a six-figure digital marketing agency. I've got these clients. To be honest, it doesn't bother me anymore. It's kind of a weird thing to say. I mean, we've run the business since 2003 without a business plan. Oh my God. And it's just, we've just just done our own thing. You know, we have holidays, we have the fun stuff, but I think actually looking at something and saying, you know, I'm going to grow this business to 20 million and sell it, and that's my success goal, it's not really something we thought about.
Yeah, but that's the old model of success. The old model of success was you do this, you do this, you do this, you do this. It's like, it sounds like, see, I think the old success model is broken, completely broken. And I think people are starting to come to the terms of the idea that, hang on, success is not about that getting over there. It's about the journey I do getting to it.
Yeah. That's sort of other podcasts I listen to. They talk about that's the sort of the millennial journey, isn't it? It's no longer about it. It's about the journey, not the destination.
Mm.
And I think for us now, it's not about having, you know, making an awful lot of money, a stick in the bank and then retire. It's actually, let's make enough money that's comfortable that we can still relax now, go and take holidays, go dog sledding in Tromso, go, you know, hiking in Switzerland, whatever it may be, and give us that freedom. So I think that freedom probably is a definition of our success at the moment.
Freedom is becoming that big word, isn't it? Everyone is looking at that idea of freedom as not being locked into something or creating more space and freedom.
Yeah, because it's not, you know, yes, we've run our own business since 2003, but we've created a sort of a business, but in the first few years, we'd probably just created a job.
That's what everyone does. How many people in your business?
So at the moment, there's full-time, it's me and the wife. And then we have a team of freelancers that work around the world. So we're flexible. So we have, at any one time, we can have up to 15 people working in the business.
Hmm.
And the beauty of that is that they're everywhere. So we've got
English. There's always someone working for you.
There's always something going on. So which is a blessing and a curse, because it means that there's always something to check.
It means you'll never stop working. but I guess, I'm a bit like that though. I don't see any difference between, I in my day, there's just a day. I don't see a working day.
Yeah.
It's like whether I'm making breakfast or having a client conversation, it's the same thing to me. It's just day.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people get, we do get bogged down in the stress of that sometimes, because I do think it would be nice to work, you know, actually let's do 2 solid hours from 10 to 12, have a 2-hour lunch break and go for a walk on the beach and then come back and do another focus 2 hours because blah, blah, blah. But you never get there. It never happens. And so then actually you just think, you know what, let's just go with the flow. Let's just see where today goes.
Yeah.
We could have lunch at 12, we could have lunch at 1, and let's see what we've got lined up this afternoon, that kind of thing. And I think that's going to start making people a lot more happier.
I keep my day quite flexible, so I need to run today at some point today, so I will pick the time. I look out the window and go, okay, am I going to dodge those clouds in the next hour? Yes, I'll go now.
Get there before the Beast of the East arrives.
That's what I do. That's how I kind of work it. So if you had advice for people to kind of emulate what you do, or to kind of, you know, to kind of like get in touch with their own passion with stuff, where would you guide them? If someone's going, look, you know, my life don't work as I'd like to, what is your advice to people?
I mean, to be honest, it's kind of hard. I mean, overall, work is easy. Work is pick your passion, or pick something you know about initially. So, you know, if you've just left a career, or you're about to think, you're thinking about leaving a career, do what you know. You know, don't go off, because you're going to have to learn a ton of stuff anyway, but don't compound that kind of problem. And I think that will help you then everywhere else with life, because if you get too bogged down and stressed, thinking, I've got to set up a business, I need to now know how to build a website, I now need to do all these things because I've now become my own business owner. If you're having to learn too much, it's going to impact on your life. And then in all your relationships and all your family and everything else. So take the easy option. If it's a case of just, you know, taking some consultancy work to start with, and don't even worry about a website, you know, don't even worry about, I think it's kind of funny from my first business that we ran, the web design agency in 97, the first thing I did was went off and did letterhead, paper and business cards. I would never do that now. In fact, I don't even think we have business cards. You know, so people get bogged down with the wrong thing. Go and get clients, because clients will create their own problems for you in terms of stress and managing and learning and everything else. But they'll also help you, because they're going to pay your bills. And if your bills are paid, you're going to have much better relationship with your family, with the wife, with the kids, everything else, because you'll be more relaxed. And to be honest, for us, that's the simple key. It's just bringing in enough money so we can relax.
So do you, I mean, I know we've kind of touched on what success is. I mean, and I don't think you have any long-term goals, but do you, is there a long-term plan for this, or is it just more of the same for you?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it would be more of the same. I mean, we're trying to transition the business more at the moment to get Stella out of the business. So Stella, the other directors, my wife's not well. So we're trying to get her out of the business early, but the 50% of the business depends on her at the moment. So we're trying to pivot, if you like, into more knowledge consultancy base using what I've got up here to actually generate revenue, as opposed to us actually physically doing the work. So the goal over the next 2 years is to do that, so that the business transitions into something that generates income. Yeah. So that will be a definition of success for us in the next couple of years. Yeah. And that seems to be going quite well at the moment. So yeah, it's very, very early days. So yeah, that for us is where we're going. But yeah, for people, it's almost, I think you need to give enough time. Everyone's in a rush. So, you know, don't define success at day one. And then if you don't hit it in the first week, don't worry, you know.
I have this real struggle with getting the big goal. The big goal. I have this real struggle with this thing. And I think the big goal eats people alive at some stage.
Yeah, I think the problem for a lot of entrepreneurs is that big goal will change every 10 minutes.
Hmm.
Because, you know, the biggest thing I say to entrepreneurs, and I struggle with this every day, I've got hundreds and hundreds of journals and books upstairs full of ideas. Full of ideas. And the problem is that my wife says I'm like a dog with two tails when I come across a new idea.
Yeah.
And you just and it's this, it's coming back to this focus thing.
Focus and simplicity.
It's focus and simplicity. So it's getting away from that. So, you know, pick something, run with it. Give it 12 months. Don't think about starting to add things or tailor things or think about this new thing that you've seen. And, you know, you have conversations like we do, and, you know, you can then suddenly think, right, yeah, Paul said that. Yeah, right, okay. Let me think, what can I do with that? And it does. You then end up just sitting there thinking, which is great if you can get paid to think. I think that'd be the best job for me. If someone could say to me, right, solve this problem, that'd be fantastic. I'd do that all day.
I need to get a conversation with a scientist or someone. I've not actually sorted that one out. I want to get a conversation with someone that's done a long-term research project, because it makes me wonder, how do you go to your university or office and sit down every day and research the molecule that does this and this? What are you doing every day for 20 years looking at this molecule? Or, you know, I just can't get my head around it, that someone would spend that amount of time.
Yeah, that to me, that's actually, I actually find that the other way around. I find that easier, because I can see the big goal in that. And the big goal in that is that part of the thing with Stella being ill is that it's an immune problem. So she's at then we're at the cutting edge of the limit of man's knowledge about molecular biology in terms of the immune system. So I can see somebody looking at a particular genome or a particular DNA structure and spending 20 years trying to solve it, because we're all going to have, you know, you think about things like we're becoming immune to antibiotics.
Yes.
You know, there's all this kind of stuff going on. So we need to start fighting this. So I can see those people. These guys are going to be the real heroes if you can stay focused for that long. And these guys will stay focused for that long, because they will see what they're doing is making a massive impact on humanity, whereas I just sell marketing funnels.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, when you look at it that way, I can see someone dedicating their life to that. If they're in a structure that gives them the family life and the income to do that. Yeah, I could quite easily see that. But yeah, that should be an interesting concept. I'm trying to rack my brain so I know anybody.
No, I'm sure I'll find someone. I always do. But I mean, they will always pop up. Everyone does. I mean, you know, the right people turn up for these podcasts. I put effort out there, but always the right person shows up at the right time. So, you know, it's kind of how it works.
Yeah.
So, all right. Is there anything that is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't ask you?
No, I can't think of anything. It's not, because it was just really, it is almost like a fireside chat, isn't it? I've got no agenda here. I'm not selling anything. So no, I don't think there was. No, it's been interesting.
Yeah, it's like, it's always nice to ask that question, because it's like, I you know, it's like there's always sometimes people go off the line and go, oh, I wish I'd said so-and-so. It's like anything that you think you need to say, I mean, that would be important to people to hear.
No, I think we've said it already. I'm starting to sound like Gary Vee, aren't I? Banging on about the same thing. It's literally, it's simplicity.
You're not sounding like Gary Vee at all. No.
there's a lot less cussing.
No, that's an interesting point to Gary Vee, because I have a problem with Gary Vee. I have a problem with his, I mean, I appreciate you need focus and to do the work, but I do think you need a life.
It's kind of one of those things, but I sort of look at that and it's an interesting hustle, but he's kind of a character. I've sort of followed him for a number of years, so it's interesting, like you say.
Were you involved with Dan's World? Were you involved with Dan's World when he came to visit?
No, I knew because I wasn't involved with Dan at that point, but I knew of Gary before that. So I had Gary's first book when it came out, Crush It, because we used to do a lot of consulting in the US, especially around sort of California and sort of digital technology. So he was already a known person to the then. So I like it, but it's an interesting one, because he's, you know, built a career by saying the same thing literally over and over and over and over and over and over again, and people pay to listen to him say the same thing over and over and over and over and over, and over again. So it is what it is, but
simplicity, simple message. But you know, it is though. But there's nothing complex about what we do when you look at it that way. All we do is find an audience and speak to them in the way they want to hear what we're saying, and offer them something at the back of it.
Yeah. And that's literally that's marketing 101. But if you lose sight of that, then it becomes very, very complicated, because you either don't have the right platform for the audience, or you don't have the right audience for the platform. And then you don't have the right process for any of it. And you do get bogged down that shiny object syndrome. We're all sort of, you know, we're all magpies. We're all
absolutely. This is where we came in. So if people want to get a hold of you or connect with you, what's the process? What can they do?
The easiest thing at the moment is probably just find me on Facebook or LinkedIn.
Yeah. Those links will be on the what?
I'll send you an email with those. But if people go to my digital agency website, it will scare the bejeebus out of people, because it's aimed at high-end corporate banks and insurance companies.
So I did have a look at that, and I did have a look at that today, and I did wonder what our conversation is going to be like. I did think I thought you might turn up in a suit.
It's a brand and an image for that market. So but if people connect with me on Facebook or LinkedIn, I'm human, you know, I have a soul.
Yes,
I'm not a Gordon Gecko, so it's all good.
So on that subject, being human and having a soul, you know, we are animals on this world, and you know, we come here as children, you know, as animals, and we grow, and we do what we do, and then we leave. What's the point of it all? Why are we here? What's the meaning of life for you?
For us, it's just, you know, I don't know how much you dug into me, but we ran an animal rescue for 10 years. We ran an animal rescue charity for 10 years. And we've changed an awful lot of stuff within animal husbandry over those years. So we've left the mark in that kind of thing, sort of helping small animals and that kind of stuff. So we have a lot of affinity with animal charities, animal groups. We try and get involved as much as possible. As a digital agency, we've built websites supporting Save the Bears, Save the Seals, Save the Badgers, Save Everybody. So we give in that way. And I think that's the legacy is, you know, I don't want a statue. We're not into that. I don't want an MBE. We're not into any of that rubbish. It's just about helping where you can. And I think if everybody takes some responsibility for some of this stuff, whatever they're passionate about, as opposed to just clicking like on Facebook, or click share, actually, you know, open your wallet, give somebody some money, help someone out, go through your cupboards and you know, stick all your all your junk on eBay and have it all donated to charity. You know, there's stuff, you know, people can do. And I'd like to almost be in that kind of position at some point to do a lot more work with charities, you know, non-profits, that kind of stuff, and share with them some of the stuff that we've learned over the years.
But that's an action as such. I mean, what for you is the value? What is the meaning of life? What's it for? Why are we here?
Do you know what? I don't even think about it.
Okay, that's fine.
I literally don't think about it. I was saying to Stella on the way back when we were out yesterday. I mean, there's a Red Dwarf episode where Lister talks about the human race, and he says, wouldn't it be amazing to think that actually the reason that no aliens have ever come to Earth is because everyone else thinks that we're a disease, and that we're actually, you know, we're space herpes in the universe, that no one likes us because we, you know, because we do literally do that, don't we? We take stuff, we expand, we consume, we grow, we do, you know, this works in exactly the same way as a disease. So, you know, Red Dwarf actually is quite deep and meaningful. I think we need to revisit Red Dwarf.
A deep and meaningful program, I think.
Yeah, it is. It does. Yeah. Dave Lister, you know, is right up there with the greats.
Yeah. Didn't he actually become the cat's religion?
Yeah, he was. He was. It's kind of strange, but yeah, to be honest, you know, there's so much going on with life. I don't get bogged down with it. It's not that I don't have time to sit and think about it. I just don't think about it. Really, don't think about it.
It's a nice thing to do, because in a way, it's like you know, a plant does a plant. You know, my orchid on the thing here, they just do orchid.
Yeah.
And that's it. And cats just do cats.
Yeah.
And Jason, you're just doing Jason.
Yeah, that's it. I have a hard enough job doing this without thinking about why. Yeah.
Well, Jason Hewlett, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a joy to speak to you.
No, it's been good. No, I appreciate your time.
That's great. Okay. Well, maybe we'll talk again sometime, and maybe on a professional level. Who knows?
It's, you never know.
You never know. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks, Paul.
And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Jason Hewlett. You can connect with Jason on LinkedIn or Facebook, or search for the name on Facebook, Affiliate Dojo. As with all of my guests, you can find the details underneath the relevant podcast. And if you're looking for a particular podcast at Life, Passion and Business, the search facility on the website is in the top right-hand corner. Do you review or like podcasts? I ask you to reach out and support us with a like or comment. You see, not only does it feed my ego, but it's great for the podcast algorithm. And the fact is, the more likes and comments we get, the more this podcast is shown to other people. And that's a big win for me, reaching out to more people. So if you feel like giving us a little bit of a like or review support, it would be deeply appreciated. So that's it for this week, and thank you for listening. I appreciate your time and attention, and I will catch you later.